You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. We're welcoming Michael Jarrett on the line, and he is one of our upcoming authors in an upcoming Mission Matters release, so can't wait to get into that. And Mike is also president, CEO, and founder of QuestGen Systems, Inc. Mike, welcome to the show.
Adam, it's great to be here with you today.
All right, Mike. So excited to have you on, and we'll get a little bit into this book today, but we're not going to do too much of a deep dive because we will be bringing you back on the show once the book is live and launched, because definitely want to pick your brain on your writing and also get further into your ideas. But we'll get this episode started the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So Mike, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Mike, what mission matters to you?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me today. It's terrific being here. So my background has been developing technology and solutions for people to make their lives more effective and run their businesses more efficiently. I grew up in technology for the last 30 plus years. And then in 2004, I was with a company that had been sold, and a buddy of mine who's a physician and a researcher at UCSF introduced me to a colleague of his, and he was trying to build a database for a clinical research study. And I soon learned that the tools for academic clinical research were really wanting. And so we developed a web-based solution for that. And then over the last 6 or 8 years, we've really been focusing what we've learned in doing academic clinical research and moving to addressing social issues. So we have a version of our product that's designed for people who are getting or understanding or providing solutions or and support for people who are giving out and understanding people who are might be victims of violence or receiving any sort of public support.
Great having you on. And we will definitely go further into QuestGen Systems and exactly how you're helping people, because I think it's fascinating and I think it's much needed. But take us a little bit further into those early years, and I'll tell you where I'm going with this. So a lot of business owners, a lot of executives, a lot of individuals out there that maybe have a certain expertise or maybe want to go out there and start a company of their own in a field. And, you did it. So meaning some people have an idea, a thesis, they don't necessarily always cross over into making that a business. Like, take us back to those early years. Like, how did this thing launch?
Sure. Well, so I was kind of my early 40s. I was, I'd grown up in technology. I live here in the Silicon Valley area. I've worked in companies that provided relational database software and high-end consulting. That when I started out of school, I worked for the company that ultimately became Accenture. So I had a background in working with large organizations, and I'd also worked in a number of startup environments. And I was kind of to a point in my career where I was trying to decide the right next thing. I had a couple of interviews with startup companies, venture funded, those kinds of things. And I really wanted to do something that had a significant impact on not just building systems for great technology, but also having an impact on kind of improving the human condition. So when I had this opportunity to do a consulting project in clinical research, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great opportunity to provide and explore kind of a new area for me. And it allowed me to step away from my executive positions. And I really got back into the technology and got dirty in how the internet worked and a whole bunch of other things. And it was terrific fun.
I love your term, the right next thing, right? It's such a good term to think about what the right next thing is. So my next question, if you could obviously go back and tell that, we all learn, by the way, from the ups, the downs, sideways, in between, everything, right? Like, there's nothing is ever just this linear path where everything always works out. If you could go back to that Mike that was kind of just getting going again in terms of this business in the field, like, what kind of things would you tell him?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up really focused on technology. And my background is large-scale application development, coding, and a whole bunch of those kinds of things. And one of the things that I've really learned over the many years is technical skills are great, but building a really solid network of people, developing resources, and being able to conceive of the problem that your potential customer or client has is more critical than how cool your tech is. I heard a quote at a trade show not too long ago that said, you should fall in love with your client's problem, not your product. And I would have said that to myself way back then, because I think our product is terrific, but really more important is the problem that we're trying to solve.
Oh man, you're dropping bombs today, Mike. You should fall in love with your client's problem, not your product. You just hit me in the heart with that one. That's awesome. So I want to jump around a bit here for a moment. So the book's coming up. It's coming out later this year. I'm really excited about it. We're going to keep it kind of surface level today. We're not going to go too far, but tell us a little bit more about maybe some of the ideas you plan to propose in the upcoming release.
In addition to, you know, getting into clinical research, which is terrific. I mean, it is a bunch of really interesting people working hard to solve fascinating problems. But I realized as we got into some of these other areas, we actually started working with a researcher at UCSF who was running a project at San Francisco General Hospital where they were looking at people who were victims of violence. And these were typically gang-related incidents. And what they were looking to do was to understand, well, how well did these people do if they get in a program where they get some treatment and some life coaching and counseling and helping them get back into sort of a mainstream, back to school, getting a good job, getting a stable housing situation. And we started really doing outcomes around that. And then what ended up happening is people started using our platform for some case management related kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so we realized that while academic clinical research is really important and it improves the way we do medicine because we write academic papers and peer-reviewed journals, that's terrific. But also really important is looking at how you can affect the lives of these young people who are, you know, young adults. And if we can help provide some tools and technology to let caseworkers be more effective in guiding these people, that was tremendously satisfying. And we heard stories and saw kids who were fundamentally transformed, not necessarily by our technology, but by the application of good practices in counseling and those kinds of things. And so it totally inspired us to move toward social services bent and really best practices in helping people.
And so just to make sure that I'm understanding this right, so you really started on the really academic clinical research side of things, and not saying that you're still not delivering on that, but that was the root and the core. And then over time, you thought a little bit more about the application side and what you could actually do and like what kind of change you could affect as you kind of moved over into a place that in the market that really needed your help and your data and your expertise and really the social services side and how you can deliver the social services side of the health care could deliver better on their promises to their, you know, clientele and patients. Am I kind of understanding that correct? I want to make sure I got
it. No, I think you have that exactly right. As we look at the challenges beyond just sort of hospital-based violence programs, which are typically gang-related, there are elements of people who are in need and understanding ways that help can be delivered to these people through supportive case managers, through whatever resources they might need. One of the things that we've learned in talking with a number of people in large cities and counties, the process for getting social services can be really complex. And it's incumbent upon people who may have a whole number of challenges in their life to go through and fill out a bunch of information and verify where they live and how much money they make and all these kinds of things. And they don't just have to do it once. They have to do it over and over and over for every different program that they apply to. So one of the directions that we're going is to build a system of record where these people can provide their information one time and tremendously streamline the process for getting services. And so we're really energized by the ability to help more people to improve the data flow so that caseworkers spend more of their time actually helping people and working on their issues than they do filling out paperwork.
Yeah. And I want to circle back to this record and what you're mentioning. But before we do that, because I have some more questions about it, because I think it's highly valuable. And one of my previous guests, Kay Wilson Bolton, I mean, she runs a homeless shelter as a volunteer executive director. And she's kind of come on the show multiple times and, you know, educated myself and the audience as well in some of this need part. So I want to go a layer deeper there. But before we do, how about just see, because you have a unique vantage point, because you're looking at the data and you're really looking at the system. Can you tell us maybe from the systemic side, like what you're seeing, like in terms of the need? Because I don't want to assume that everybody, you know, has access to that information or really understand what that opportunity, problem, thing that you can solve. Like, I don't, you know, however we want to word it, but I don't want to assume that people understand that systemic opportunity, if you will.
Certainly people getting social services in the U.S. and really our focus is in the domestic, you know, the market across the U.S. It's something around 18% of our population at some point gets some sort of social services support. And
it's a big percentage. I mean, that's huge.
The numbers are 59 million people every month are getting some sort of social services. Yeah. And these are administered by all kinds of different organizations. Some are community-based organizations that can be faith-based or nonprofits in the community. Some are county. Some are large-scale metropolitan, you know, cities who are doing this. And they're all different. I mean, they all have their own different challenges. Some are, you know, dense urban areas, some are rural. You know, it's amazing. Across the U.S., there are something over 3,000 counties or, you know, parishes or whatever you have in, you know, where you are. And they all work differently, you know, and we have Los Angeles County, you know, 10 million people plus. And then there are counties with, you know, as few as 5,000 people and in some cases even less. And so it's tremendously diverse. And they all work differently. They all have different political leanings, which also affects how these things work. And it's tremendously fascinating to really see how sort of our, as a society, how we deliver services to people who are in need or in challenge.
Now, switching back to the need side of things, I want to, if you could maybe give us some type of example, just to make this, like, I don't want to say easy, but just to shed some light on this, like of what a user journey could look like. And I don't mean like what happened that caused the person to need the social services. I just mean in general, when you talk about things like them having used many systems, whether it's getting a license, whether it's proving income, whether it's, if you could make it, maybe take us through what something like that could look like, versus what, you know, your ideal scenario would be and what, you know, QuestGen Systems is working on to make it, let's just say, more user-friendly.
Right, right. You know, one of the areas that gets a lot of attention today, especially, and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a lot of focus of late on homelessness in San Francisco and surrounding communities. And it's a very visible sign of social challenges. But there's also a tremendous number of people who are maybe working full time, maybe even multiple jobs, who are struggling to get by. And these are people who benefit tremendously from programs that may help with, you know, of course, food subsidies or food banks, may help with some income, some rental assistance. And there's all kinds of programs that are out there. And it's shocking when you learn that there are literally thousands of programs out there to help people. And so the big challenge is finding the right program, matching the need of the individual who's out there with the services that are the best fit for what they're trying to do. And so, you know, because we want everyone to live happy, productive lives, and we all go through ups and downs. And so, you know, social services should be there for people when they're challenged, and it shouldn't be as laborious as it can be to apply for these programs, to get what you need, to get back on track. Because, you know, people generally want to have a great job. They want to have a meaningful life. They want to have great relationships. And it doesn't always work out that way. And so it's nice that if we can have well-packaged, well-designed support for these people so they can move through whatever challenges they're looking at and get their lives back on track.
Can you maybe explain maybe somehow some of those social determinants of health work and how that kind of frames some of the opportunity or, you know, problem areas out there?
it's really interesting that this whole concept of social determinants of health, you know, that the what we're learning is that people who are have real challenges just in their life, they don't have a food security, they're worried about how they're going to feed themselves or their kids, and they're worried about where they're going to sleep. And maybe not tonight, but maybe in a week or two or even next month. That worry and that stress is really debilitating from a health perspective. And what people are learning is that if you can address the stress today, you know, for what can be potentially hundreds of dollars, it will save thousands or tens of thousands of dollars when somebody gets really sick and they have to go to the emergency room or be in the ICU because there weren't issues that were addressed that when the problem was very solvable. And so there's a really interesting study that was done that it's called the ACE study, and it's ACE stands for adverse childhood events. And they looked at people who were under 18 or younger, and they asked them, or actually they were surveying people who were 50 and older about what their life was like when they were 18 and younger. And they asked them 10 questions about things in their environment that may have affected, you know, that they were their parents in a violent situation, where's their crime in their neighborhood, a bunch of questions like this. And what they found is that people who had unstable childhood environments were much sicker than people who weren't. So even, you know, 30 and 40 years after these events occurred, they take a toll on people's health. And so they're really starting to connect the dots about where, how we live, the stress we feel, the day-to-day problems that we have turn into real fundamental health issues longer term. So if we can address these issues early, everybody is better off, you know, from a social perspective, the costs are tremendously less. And the people who are having the issues are living a much better and much happier and healthier life.
Yeah. And I've interviewed, you know, quite a few people that were maybe tackling this problem from the healthcare side of things, whether they were working for healthcare systems and from the medical side, or if they're working from the insurance side, where they were, you know, actually writing insurance and or designing plans and incentive programs for employers to then get ahead of this. And, you know, what I've gathered from all these conversations and interviews is that exactly what you said, it affirms it, number one, which is if you can get ahead of these things, then small problems can really save, improve somebody's quality of life down the line, as you mentioned, but then it can potentially, depending on the situation, of course, also keep it from compounding and leaving it to where, you know, one particular, maybe it was they had, you know, beginner or like entry level kind of like diabetes, and then that wasn't treated, and then it compounds. Now someone's losing limbs, and now they can't work, or they're doing other things, and it just keeps on spiraling and going. So now one of the great things I think about what you're doing is if you can make, especially for the resources that are always there, that are already there. So sometimes we have this thought that maybe, you know, there isn't resources or dollars, or we have to always increase things. Sometimes it's making a little bit better and more efficient use of what's already been allocated, which is, I think, falling right in line with what QuestGen Systems is doing, is allowing people to get better access for what's already there, also providing data and context so that, you know, as reallocations and things are happening, we have more data and we have another way to view this so that we know not only how to, you know, allocate more resources with our, you know, voting dollars or whatever it happens to be, right? Whether it's giving or otherwise, but whatever that looks like. And then also where we're kind of like missing the mark and where we can improve, but this is kind of taking that clinical side to it and making things more efficient and taking that data approach versus maybe just what's popular. What do you think?
No, absolutely. And I think the, you know, a lot of the challenges we see are, you know, people who are drawn to these lines of work who are really caring individuals who they set up these community-based organizations or be driven toward a career of being a case manager or, you know, support professional or whatever that their line of work is. What we found is those people are passion-driven and they aren't necessarily the kind of personalities that will want to go out and build the systems, right? So our challenge is to make these systems super easy to implement, easy to use, easy to get the data out of. So, I mean, one of the things that's heartbreaking is when you see these programs that don't get adequate funding, and the reason they don't is because it's not because they're not doing great work. It's because they're not able to report to their funders the impact that they're having, right? So in addition to doing great work, you also have to document what you're doing and make sure that people can understand that, hey, the dollar that I'm spending today is going to save you 50, 100, 1,000 down the road. And if you can't document that, no matter how good your intentions are, it's tough to maintain the funding. And so, and while there's a sense now of where, you know, these pendulums always swing back and forth, and there's a great deal of money coming to social programs and trying to help people at this point, there's also a lot of challenges about how to do that most effectively. And then the political currents are, you know, always changing. And so what it gets back to is really good data and things that can demonstrate that people are really getting great service and really having better outcomes and improved lives because of the money and the services that they're getting. And because it's always a challenge. And when somebody shows up in the ER, you know, they will always get help to get stable, but they won't get their lives back on track. And there's kind of this perception in our healthcare system that, hey, you can walk into the emergency department, you can always get help. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but I have many emergency room doctor friends who will tell you that their job is to make sure that people are treated for their acute, immediate problems, not their long-term health. And so it's really that emergency room physician's job to make sure that they're going to be okay for the next day or two or three, but not for the next year or two or three. And so it's really important to build this mechanism in our healthcare system and our social support structures so that we can make sure as people go through these challenges in their lives that that it's easiest for them as it can be to get the services that they need.
So I'm assuming that some of the people that engage with your platform overall, like they're a different type. I'm just curious, what are the types, organizations or systems that engage with and that use Question?
Many of them are governmental. I mean, so a lot of big client of ours is the City of San Jose and the Mayor's Task Force on Gang Violence. That project was initially a hospital-based violence intervention program. It then grew to address school incidents. And we have other programs that look at domestic violence and then other things, too, where we are helping people who are looking at homelessness situations. And one of the challenges from a consumer or people who are providing these services is there are many, many different software vendors and software solutions. There's also requirements that can be quite complex. So if you run a homeless shelter, the reporting requirements and all the things that you have to do to make sure that your shelter is up to code and doing all the things it has, it's incredibly complex. And you know, so good systems can help that. The challenge is when you get a lot of systems working together, you know, our job is to make them not only work effectively, but to make them work together as a landscape of systems, not just an individual solution. And so a lot of what we're doing is building application programming interfaces so that systems can talk to one another and then people can just do their jobs and they don't have to worry so much about all the technical things that tie you up.
It's great. It's a great story and happy to bring this to our audience. So we've gone over a lot today and I will be bringing for the audience, I'll be bringing Mike back on. We'll do a full deep dive into his writing once the book is live that we'll be releasing together. But that being said, Mike, I mean, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Question Systems Inc.?
Well, you know, our big challenge is, you know, it's super interesting that people who are experiencing homelessness or having challenges around other things, they frequently will have some sort of smartphone or device that they can interact with. And what we want to do is build a platform where increasingly those people can make their needs known through their own device that they're going to have with them. And so we want to enable as much self-service as we possibly can. And a lot of this too is we want to provide solutions that are really cost effective to a really large number of users. We're excited about the next chapter. We're doing a bunch of interesting things as a small company that's you know, growing quickly, and we're very excited for the future.
Awesome. So Mike, if somebody's watching this and they want to learn more about Question Systems Inc., what's the best way for them to follow up and to connect with you and your team?
I think our best way is just through our website, which is question.com, and it's spelled Q-U-E-S-G-E-N.com. And that's probably the best way to learn more about what we're up to, and always looking for people who are looking potentially either for a job or for opportunities. So we're excited about our direction, and we'd love to get to know anybody who's excited about the same areas that we are.
Awesome. We'll put the links to all your website and everything else in the show notes so that all the guests can just head on over, click on the link and check out your site. And speaking of our audience and guests, this is your first time listening to Mission Matters or engaging with the platform. We're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, you know, why they do what they do, and really what we can all learn from that so we can all learn and grow together. If that's the type of content that you find interesting or sounds fun, I mean, hit that subscribe button because we have many more mission-based individuals just like Mike coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Mike, looking forward to the next time we get to work with each other. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been terrific talking.